Hello and welcome to the Friday edition of Catholic Answers Live. So happy to get this time here with you and super happy because one of my favorite things to do is flannel panel, where we all put on flannel shirts and we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And Darren, is that that's a flannel shirt, right? You look, it's plaid or flannel. I'm going to call anything plaid flannel. And you can call, you can get involved if you want. We'll do what we can to get the calls, but I'll it's not our number one priority, all right? Because when Joe Heschmeyer's here, that's the number one priority. Keep him happy. 888-318-7884 is the number if you want to get involved. We're going to do some really all the big news, we're going to cover it from a Catholic perspective. Joining me in studio is Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. Hello, Chris.
Keep the talent happy. Is that what you were saying about Joe?
Yes.
He's high maintenance.
Right. Yeah.
He is high maintenance.
Oh, my gosh. Joe Heschmeyer, are you kidding me?
Honestly.
It's like it's never-ending work.
I'm currently drinking off-brand water, just for the record.
Off-brand water. Oh, is that called tap water or is the you are?
No, it's sparkling. You, don't get me wrong.
Chris, you are just bringing it with your flannel today. You really look like you should be playing guitar and singing Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Is this, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, 90s grunge.
Yes.
I thought I could branch off, you know. It doesn't always have to be the brawny guy, right?
That's a great idea.
I know that's what you associate with when you see me.
Right, the brawny guy. Yes, I do. But I just got video of Joe Heschmeyer. You're not even wearing flannel. What is the matter with Joe Heschmeyer? Apologist here at Catholic Answers.
I was wondering how it took you this long to attack this. Yes, I totally forgot his flannel panel.
Well, they just started the video for me. What the heck?
We'll wait, Joe.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
Joe, do you not get the idea of flannel panel? Were we not clear on what it means?
Full disclosure, I don't know the difference between a flannel and a plaid. And
nobody does. Well, wear plaid then. What is that? Like, that's not an excuse for wearing a plain colored shirt.
This is two different material categories, plaid and flannel.
But on video, who cares?
Flannel doesn't have.
I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh. It's all about the optics with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if there's
a whitewashed sepulchers. Exactly.
Oh, way man. To go to the scripture there. It is a Catholic show.
It's like one of the meanest things Jesus ever said. Yeah, I know. Dump that on me. All right, we got a lot of news to get to. All right.
Oh, I just want to go on the difference between plaid and flannel for the next 10 minutes.
I really want to know that. You know, I think if callers want to add in their own flannel, understanding of that difference.
Flannel is a weave. It's a kind of fabric.
It's not a pattern.
It's a cotton weave. It's a cotton that's brushed, right? To give it that flannel.
No, I know it's a thing. I don't know what kind of thing it is. You're asking me like I know. Can we move on from flannel, please? All right, Joe, next time we invite you to do flannel panel.
I don't think Joe's ever get invited again.
I think this might be less than wear flannel.
I'm about to be defenestrated here, yeah.
Or thrown out a window. One or the other. 888-318-7884 is the number.
You just said we weren't going to take calls.
No, I said I might take calls. I said I might take calls, but the most important thing is to keep Joe happy.
So there should be an incentive if people actually get on the show today. We could send them a flannel shirt or something.
Excellent. Maybe a roll of paper towels with you on the table?
Oh, there you are.
That's it. We'll send you a roll of paper towels. Are you trying to make life hard on the people in customer service? Like, we ask them to do a lot for us.
We do.
Now they got to go out and buy paper towels and send those to people.
Speaking of which, customer service, those ladies in there just painted in there, and it looks great.
I didn't even know that they painted.
Do you ever go in there and visit? No, you don't go talk to the little people, Si.
What are you saying about Bernadette?
Oh, well, she is.
She is vertically challenged. Okay, I can't believe you said that. Sorry, Darren. But all right.
Wow.
Can we get to the news now?
That is Mike. You've got that power, Darren.
I want to say one more thing about customer service. Yes. If you're coming to the conference, Brooke.
Oh, she painted so beautifully.
This crucifix.
She is a real artist.
It is extraordinary, and we're going to have it on display at our conference. It's her inspiration was the Cimabue crucifix in Florence at the big Franciscan church there at Santa Croce.
Which I thought we had in here at one time.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not that one.
Yeah,
that's the other one.
Yeah,
it is, and she's done an amazing job.
Really has, yeah. All right, I want to get to the news, and so I do want to assure both of you that I have missed some flannel panel time. We haven't done a lot of flannel panel, but I do have NPR radio audio for
Sweet.
You. And we're going to do it in the first hour. It's so NPR, I can't wait till the second hour to get to it.
The unofficial fourth member of the flannel panel.
But right. Aisha Chang, the unofficial member of the flannel panel. And she is my favorite reporter there. And it's her story. And it's just... well, it's beyond description, but there is something I wanted to ask you guys about before we did that, because Chris and I were just having a discussion in which Rosie was making fun of us because we can apparently not pronounce the man's name, and his name is Shia LaBeouf, and she apparently made a video of us saying Shia LaBeouf about 10 times.
LaBeouf.
And so we apologize to Mr. LaBeouf because we did not know. But the reason
Shia the beef, I think, is what that means.
Le beef? Is that what it means?
The beef.
LaBeouf. LaBeouf, right?
I'm not getting into this.
The way you're pronouncing
I was told
like
by someone under
Shia
30 that I was pronouncing it wrong, so I was pronouncing it wrong. But yes. You know, oftentimes seen as a very troubled young man. You know, he's really because mm-hmm. he worked for the Disney Corporation as a child. That's shocking that he didn't turn out. You know, just
normal,
happy and well
pie.
Adjusted, but now seems to have come to the Catholic faith, and this is what Chris and I were talking about that about the people doing interviews with him, among them Bishop Barron. That is that really prudent to do an interview with someone who's brand new in the Catholic faith about their Catholic faith? I can understand why people want to do it. But I would feel very uncomfortable doing it. I want to get your view on it, Joe Heschmeyer.
Yeah, it's a good question. I purposely kind of stayed quiet on this whole thing, but mm-hmm. I'm glad that I have to address it now.
Yeah. But say LaBeouf, because we got
things.
It wrong. LaBeouf.
Yeah. Well, I just say Shia. Because
oh, Shia, not Shia.
Form of Islam
oh.
with that name. No, Shia is the actual
Oh, okay.
No,
don't make it worse for me, Joe.
I'm not under 30. I can't pronounce actors' names. No, so, okay, my thoughts, if I'm going to, they're a little scattered shot, but they're as followed. One, if this is an authentic conversion, we need to lead with that. Like, there's more rejoicing in heaven
God.
Over one
and right.
lost sheep coming home than in the 99. But two, there's reasons for hesitation. One of those reasons is he previously, in promoting a different movie, claimed to have converted to evangelical Christianity. That was like, I don't know, like 6 or 9 years ago.
Oh,
so
I didn't know about that.
It would not be unprecedented for him to present as converting. He is what's called a method actor. Daniel Day-Lewis is really famous for this, or Day-Lewis, as you probably pronounce it.
My left foot, I'd pronounce it that way. Okay, go ahead.
Is that Bertolt, yeah, is that Bertolt Brecht, method acting? Is
it's
that Bertolt,
Brecht. You're pronouncing it wrong.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, back to your thought.
Yeah, no, so method actors, they get into their role so thoroughly that they don't turn it off. And Shia LaBeouf's really famous for being like this and in a really kind of unhealthy sort of way. And so he's been playing Padre Pio. And so to what extent... he, as a real-life human being, behind all the masks that he wears, has had this profound change of heart. And to what extent he is even off-screen playing this role, it remains
oh,
to be
see.
Seen.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
so I guess the third thing to kind of add there. Well, I guess a few more things to add there. He's in the middle of a lot of accusations from women who've worked with him. I don't know the full nature of them, but I know there are women who won't work with him in Hollywood.
Women
and
or
to
a
not
woman.
At least one woman,
okay.
but I think there have been multiple accusations against him. I don't know. I have actively tried to avoid this story. So I've learned basically against my will.
It does feel like, you know, like the first baby steps one takes in the faith. This is a precarious moment. One should be supportive and prayerful and helpful. It does seem to me we should ask ourselves if we, you know, if I were to pick up the phone and call Mr. LaBeouf today, I would feel, am I exploiting him or am I, doing a service to him? Because you don't, his faith is more important than my interview. Let me put it that way.
So
yes.
I think here we go to a larger problem, and it's a problem that we contend with in the world of apologetics and media, which is what Catholic Answers is. It's a media apostolate. And the problem is the problem of celebrity.
Yeah, well,
and,
that's right. Yeah,
and it's not good to be a celebrity Catholic. And and celebrity convert is the idea of a celebrity convert clouds or obscures the point exactly, or the reality, please God, that Joe brought up when he first started talking about this. If in fact Shia has become a Catholic, praise God, and the angels in heaven are rejoicing.
Absolutely.
But now this is an opportunity to draw clicks to my Instagram my podcast. So Joe, you would and this is exploitation, and it is obscuring what potentially could be a real joy here. The second thing is, in the early church, Joe, you would know better than I. Recent converts were discouraged from saying anything.
Among them, St. Paul.
Theological
Saint Paul's
for several years.
Go ahead. Well,
there's
a couple places where Paul's advice in terms of qualifications of a bishop, obviously, that's different. But he says in 1 Timothy 3, verse 6, that he must not be a recent convert, or he may be puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. In other words, like when you start really making the center of the show this baby Catholic, that's really not good for them because they need time to mature and grow in a lot of areas where, you know, a lot of the things they're probably still wrong about. And now I don't think it's inherently bad to get an interview with someone and ask them why they converted. I did this years ago with Layla Briscoe when she came into the Catholic faith. She'd been a pretty prominent atheist blogger who became Catholic. I know, you know, Marcus Grodi has the Coming Home Network. Now, I don't think he's getting people a week after they become Catholic.
No, I think he vets his guests quite well, and some of those are extremely thoughtful and edifying interviews.
Boy, are they. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, just finding out, even from people in RCIA or people who've just become Catholic, not presenting them as experts and not kind of putting them on the spot to defend Catholicism, but just hearing their story can be really helpful. So, but
I found it helpful, Joe, hearing what I heard little clips of what Shia LaBeouf said. And I found it inspiring. I really did. I thought he came across as a very inspiring person.
Though it did become the tennis match with the particularly with the liturgical trads. And hey, yes. I am one. Because he made some remark about how he feels as if the new rite, someone's trying to sell him a car or something like that. In the interview with Bishop Barron, and okay, this is. This is a disparaging remark about
fellow Catholics now.
Well, about the liturgy, yeah. But now it just becomes part of the contest.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think that there's probably a few reasons why people really spread this a lot. One is the culture of celebrity. We are obsessed with celebrities, and so we care more about him converting than 1,000 regular people.
Sure.
And we shouldn't, but we do. But two, he said some really interesting and provocative things. And things that people, you know, really wanted to kind of talk about and debate. So whether his conversion is authentic or not, it really did get an interesting conversation started. But unfortunately, like you said, it really kind of brought out the Catholic infighting that is in a lot of ways really repellent to bringing people into the faith.
No, I feel like we should be a little calmer about conversions, about like there should be peace surrounding it. And one of the ways that we allow for that peace is that we are peaceful in response to the person who expresses an interest and in the person who comes into the faith. And if we get all, oh my gosh, then we start hyperventilating over this, then we're making it harder on the person. I don't have any reason to doubt the sincerity of the conversion, but even a sincere conversion, give it time to mature. Let the person. And I, frankly, I think about the Norma McCorvey story, which just had so many bizarre twists and turns that you feel like, did anybody treat this woman fairly? Did anyone think about her?
So anyone who doesn't know what that is, this is Roe from Roe v. Wade. And she was, you know, the person whose case made it to the Supreme Court and led to 50 years of abortion being legalized in the U.S. She later said that she'd become pro-life, and then kind of got famous in the pro-life world for that. And then as she was nearing death, she said some things that sort of called the authenticity of that into question. And the more you read about it, the more it sounds like, one, this is a woman who was damaged in a lot of ways and was being used by both the pro-life and pro-choice communities because right. of her celebrity status. And two, I think she was kind of like a lot of Americans, where she was conflicted on abortion, where she was maybe more okay with first trimester abortions, was really unsettled with second and third trimester abortions, and was not at ease with her own legacy. But because she didn't fit into either group's kind of talking points, I think the nuances and complexity of her own life and views
right.
were maybe hush-hushed and overlooked or exploited. I mean, it just yeah. was.
And Anne Rice really is another example.
And even her death, yeah.
Yep. Do you remember the story of Anne Rice?
The
novelist. Was she the one who got interviewed by a vampire or something?
She wrote Interview with the Vampire and a lot of other books. But, you know, she became Catholic and then she had trouble with the church's teaching on marriage and kind of renounced that, but didn't ever renounce Jesus. These are very complex stories. And I think give people the space to live them. Also,
takes a long time to become a
Britney
Catholic.
Britney Spears.
Yeah, Britney Spears is a great example. She went to...
She became a Catholic?
She did not. But she went a couple of years ago. She went to mass with her sister or something like that and then tweeted about it. And then the whole
People
Catholic
lost their minds.
Twitter yeah. world was aflame. Oh, she's one of ours now or something like that.
Yeah, that's... but that, I think, would create a sense of exploitation in the person.
Yes.
And so we got to not do that.
We're kind of creepy about it.
Yeah, like, you know, let's not be creepy when other people express an interest in the faith. And right. if they're celebrities, let's be kind and peaceful. Because I do worry about the celebrity culture, people exploiting their connection to celebrities.
Hi, Si.
Oh, that's Mel Gibson saying hi to me. whatever. I don't think that we want to exploit that.
Where can I find an example of a creepy Catholic? Hang on. Hi,
Si. Hi,
Si. Oh, Mel said hello again. All right. Well, we'll take a break. I got to talk with Mel Gibson for a few minutes. We'll be right back. More Catholic Answers Live, flannel panel.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN Global Catholic Network is the largest religious media network in the world. 11 global TV channels, English and Spanish radio networks with over 500 AM and FM radio affiliates, one of the largest Catholic websites in the world, dozens of podcasts every week, social media, electronic and print news services, and EWTN publishing. EWTN is the global Catholic network. For more about EWTN, visit EWTN.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I feel kind of ashamed because we play that little clip as a joke of Mel Gibson saying hello to me. And the whole thing about that is he's such an extraordinarily polite person. He really is genuinely polite.
He's very gracious.
I interviewed him one time. And when most of the time when you do interviews with big time celebrities, they got you, they got the next guy, they got the next guy. And they don't even bother to say your name. And he was so gracious to say, like, hi, like someone's, because... So he doesn't know me from Adam. It's a little joke. And I feel a little bit ungracious about that because he was so gracious is the only reason we have that audio of him. So if you're super big.
I hope he's listening while driving somewhere and it's just like, what the heck?
Yeah. But if you're a big superstar, famous person, address people by their name if you can. It's very meaningful.
And
it's
if you Joe, want to give clips for Catholic answers, we will exploit them.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you say it to me, there will be no end to it. If Lady Gaga ever says, hi, we'll play that audio a billion times. All right? So as a matter of fact, could we construct that out of other things Lady Gaga has said?
Wait, who is the one who follows our Twitter feed? It's not Lady Gaga. It's the other one.
I don't actually know.
It's the other one.
No, there's apparently two singers in the world. One of whom
the
follows
world divided
us.
Into two
this is Chris's view I think of it, how famous people work.
No, like
the other famous person, not Lady Gaga. The other famous
it's
person.
She's.
Is it Gwen Stefani?
Gwen Stefani.
I knew that's who it was going to be.
Just a minute.
In Chris's mind, there are two blonde ladies in the world. One of them's Lady Gaga. One of them's Gwen Stefani.
Oh, there's more than one blonde lady, but there's two blonde Italian pop singers. Oh,
I see what you're saying.
Well, there was Connie Francis.
Three, if you include Madonna.
Tony Bennett.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And Madonna. What,
I mean, I don't know if she's blonde right now, but.
What's her last name? Like Ciccone or something. She has a great Italian name.
Gwen Stefani does follow our Twitter feed. Is that not right?
That makes me happier than just about anything I've heard all week.
No, I think it's true.
If that's true, that makes me very happy.
Someone said it on the on our screen, and they also said it's apparently Cinco de Mayo today.
No, it's not Cinco de Mayo. It's Mexican Independence Day. You can't have Cinco de Mayo
in September,
Joe. Do you know how?
Cinco de Mayo de September.
Cinco. Happy Mexican Independence Day. That is not Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo celebrates a completely different thing. Joe.
Is that independence from Spain?
Yeah, winning a battle in a war that got lost, right?
I was speaking to an official Mexican just moments ago, and he has no idea what Mexican Independence Day celebrates.
Yeah.
So
can we name him?
A lot of things have happened in Mexican history. Today's Mexican Independence Day. You figure it out. That's all I'm going to say, because it's not the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, I can tell you that. The number is 888-318-7884 if you want to get involved in the conversation. But here, look, every time we do the flannel panel, I try to give you some good audio to respond to. And I generally begin my search at NPR, National Public Radio, because it is literally the goofiest place on the radio dial. It's unbelievable.
That's including our own show.
Oh, that's including the Joe not wearing flannel to the flannel panel.
Exactly.
All right.
Goofier than Art Bell? I think so.
So Ailsa Chang, my favorite NPR reporter, did a story called, and I'm going to read you the title of it, and then I got a couple quiz questions and then some audio. So are you guys willing to do a quiz with me?
Yes.
And you can play along at home. There are two quiz questions that come with this. The story is called How to Talk to Your Kids About Abortion. That's right. National Public Radio did a story called How to Talk to Your Kids About Abortion. Here's the quiz. Are you ready for the quiz? Question one. Did National Public Radio, a station paid for in part by your tax dollars, do a story called How to Talk to Your Kids About Abortion that's about how pro-choice parents can talk to their kids about how to respond to conservatives, Mormons, and evangelicals? Or is the story about how pro-life parents can help their kids respond to abortion advocates? Is it A or B on those two?
How long do I have to think about this?
Yeah, can I phone a friend? Do you have 50-50? Is that a choice?
Yeah, okay, I'll tell you, I'll eliminate the wrong choice.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to help pro-life parents.
So,
are you shocked at that? That they were not trying to help?
Well,
them?
I mean, they didn't show their kids a doll. It's a lot easier to just be like, you wouldn't kill this baby doll, would you?
But it's so easy for pro-life parents to talk about abortion. Let's not kill any other human
beings. We don't need talking points from government radio.
They were not interviewing Trent and Layla Miller for that?
No, they did not. Question number two. They did have two experts, and you're going to love the audio. Question number two is a true or false question on our two-question quiz regarding National Public Radio. National Public Radio did a story called How to Talk to Your Kids About Abortion, paid for in part by your tax dollars. True or false, in this story, they sometimes referred to women as people with uteruses and pregnant people. True or false?
Oh, you have to, because how else would I know which people we're talking about? If only there was a term.
Yeah.
People with uteruses who could get pregnant. Like, we need to have just like a one word name we give that half of the population.
Like, if we had some kind of shorthand word that we could use to refer to people with uteruses who can get pregnant.
Talking to kids.
Yeah.
Because the first question my 2-year-old's going to ask is, what's a uterus?
Right.
Yeah, right. 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 Pregnant people and people with uteruses, that is actually how they refer to what used to be called in the olden days, like the Dark Ages, as women. We used to have that word.
Yeah, but, I forgot about that word.
Yeah, I know. But it's a word that's fallen out. It's spelled W-O-M-E-N. Many people probably are not
or
even familiar.
Or Y-N, depending on your political leanings.
Right, exactly. But, okay, that's my full entire a quiz. So let me set this story up.
I don't feel like it can get any better.
Oh, the way to you. You have to hear some of this audio. Darren had to cut this audio for me out of the story. And I could walk by. He was crying at his desk. He was just sitting there crying. Like, how can our society have come to this? All right, I got audio
crying
for you.
Crying sad or crying laughing?
Not laughing, Joe. Wait till you hear the audio.
Okay.
Not laughing. National Public Radio, paid for in part by your tax dollars, recently did a story called How to Talk to Your Kids About Abortion. We'll play audio from that and get reactions from Chris Check, our president, and Joe Heschmeyer, one of our top five favorite apologists, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As Catholic apologetics have gotten stronger, Protestant responses have gotten stronger as well. And now they have their own answers to rebut the standard Catholic proofs. Don't fret, we've got you covered. In his new book, Meeting the Protestant Response, apologist Carlo Broussard gives well-reasoned biblical answers to Protestant comebacks. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Response today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity in The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Monday on More to Life. Tripped up.
Has the rug been pulled out from under your feet? We'll help you regain your balance.
That's Monday on More to Life. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. First of all, Joe Heschmeyer was joking when he said it was Cinco de Mayo today. It was
just, is that right?
He was just playing. Don't be mad at Joe.
Cinco de Cuatro.
He knows what the word Cinco means. I don't know if he knows what the word Mayo means. I think he thinks it's a white spread that you put on your bread.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So
can I share with you? We have I asked how this happened today because our refrigerator broke on Tuesday.
At home or here?
No, at home. The Czech's refrigerator broke on Tuesday. And this was it.
It was the death of the refrigerator.
It was. Yeah. It was. And do you know it's difficult to find a refrigerator right now because of the chips?
Sentence.
You're not supposed to put them in the fridge anyway.
Yeah, no, you should not put the chips in the fridge. Yeah.
Stop, Joe.
So we were fortunate. We actually went to a locally owned appliance store here in San Diego. You know what it's called?
appliances?
Aztec appliances. I felt
a little bad.
Because,
right?
Like, would you go to Nazi appliances or something?
Cut out the heart of a living human being. But, you could put it in our freezer.
They were very nice there, and no one cut my heart out. And we got it. We actually got a good deal, and then and 2 days later, they delivered it and everything. But for 2 days, we had to take all of our stuff over to Jackie's sister's house, where, like, every California family except the Czechs, they have two refrigerators.
That's the California way.
Do you have a garage?
Why do you have two refrigerators?
No,
it's California. Yeah. You have to have two refrigerators.
Do you have a garage refrigerator, Si?
Of course I have a garage. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Yeah. I have a 900 square foot house and I have two refrigerators.
Yeah.
I'm a Californian at heart.
Yeah. So we had all our stuff over.
I'm surprised you guys aren't using like ice boxes by state law or something.
Soon. So we had to take all of our stuff over to Jackie's sister and they kept it for.
You could have brought it to my house.
Three or four. We wouldn't have kept it.
We'd have ate it.
We would have ate it. But today, we went and got it at lunch, and then I'm putting it all back in the refrigerator. And we had three open jars of mayonnaise.
Yeah.
And how did that happen?
Because there's a flaw in the design of refrigerators. There's a front part and a back part.
Yes, this is exactly what
you back part right, to a refrigerator. I don't know how you do that. Maybe just it's a lazy Susan inside or something. But all right, here's some audio from Elsa Chang. Can we have a clip one? Elsa Chang at National Public Radio, paid for in part by your tax dollars.
Abortion can be difficult to talk about, even among adults. So how do you even begin to explain it to kids?
That's how the story started. The intonation from
the tone, like, I have a very hard time.
Murder is controversial. She's just the nicest person. Yeah. But that's so hard to talk about killing other people. So can you give me clip number two? I got several of these. Or did you want to respond to that at all?
The thing I was going to say on clip number one was just if you're familiar with George Orwell's Politics in the English Language or his notes on the Spanish War.
Right.
He talks about how, like, there are some things that are too horrific to just speak about plainly.
Yeah.
So you have to have these really contrived ways. You know, you eliminated a village, massacre villagers.
Yeah.
You liquidated the enemy or whatever. The whole language around warfare and around abortion and so many other horrible things. I mean, he uses the examples of a lot of, like, the Soviet liquidations and such. They're just mass murder.
Yeah,
but you find some clever ways to talk about them because it can be hard to talk about even for adults.
Even for adults, yeah. The killing of our own children can be hard to talk about. They did a story on the local PBS station here in San Diego one day about how we dehumanize immigrants by using language that dehumanizes immigrants, which I actually think is true, and I'm sorry that it happens. So I sent them an email and I said, I thought this was a great story. You should do one on unborn babies. And they never responded.
They called you back?
No, I didn't get a call. I got nothing. Mm. I got nothing. No response.
Pregnant pause.
Now that's a good one, Joe. See, that's not a bad pun. That's an acceptable pun.
I don't think that's a pun.
We call a lot of wordplays puns on this show.
Yeah, that's not a pun.
It's just
It's a pun. Look it up. I looked it up on Wikipedia. It is. Darren, can you give me clip number two from...
She attends a Catholic school. And ask me why those people want to kill babies. I explained to her that no one wants to kill babies, that abortion was a discussion that should be had between a woman and her doctor.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, so she doesn't answer the question.
Well, this is actually a mom. See, what Elsa Chang did was she got two experts, I'll put that in air quotes, a pediatrician and then I think a psychologist, to talk about how you talk to. So this is the mother presenting her dilemma. And the dilemma is her child goes to a Catholic school and comes home and asks, why do people want to kill babies? And the mother does the...
Good on that Catholic school, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say...
Which Catholic school was
Catholic
that?
What Catholic school is she... No, but thank you. I'm sorry, Catholic schools. I know you're doing... Lots of you are doing great, great work.
Some of you are, yeah.
So, a few of you. All right. This is the tenor... This is the approach, in other words. So I got that clip just to give you the approach, that the parent has a dilemma. How am I going to talk to my child about this? Because my child... is claiming that people are killing babies. And I note that the mother's response is to immediately stop talking about the baby.
Right.
To say, this is abortion is something that between doctors and women.
Right.
Yeah, it really is striking. did a piece for our website, Catholic.com, in which I look at a little bit of James Buchanan's rhetoric around abortion, because he wasn't totally comfortable with with slavery, but he just treated it as like, oh, this is don't interfere. He just talked a lot about like these Northerners who keep interfering in like the peculiar institutions in the South. And it was all about like, let's not talk about the morality of slavery itself, but let's just talk about why you need to butt out of our conversation, of our decision. And that like my plantation, my choice kind of thinking has a new form.
So the question I have for Elsa Chang and the question I have for this mom in with respect to clip number two is, was the child satisfied with this response? Because the child asked, some people are saying that there are these people and they want to kill babies. And then the mom says, abortion is between a woman and her doctor. Let me rephrase the question. Some people said there are these people who want to kill babies.
Right. That's the thing is that what the overwhelming sadness of this story is, you see innocent children asking what any normal child would ask.
Yes.
And the entire strategy is to deflect so that their question will not be answered. And so I think that they will get the sense, don't ask that question. Because when parents do that, when parents say, you know, they get very guarded in their answer, the child is not an idiot. The child knows, I must have asked something wrong that I'm not supposed to ask. So the mother immediately has the instinct to not answer the child's question, to deflect.
This is a taboo. Don't talk about it.
Right. And this is how
I think is actually the message to teach kids. Sure. If you're wanting to keep the pro-choice movement going. Like, don't say, here's when life begins. Don't say, here's the moral status of an unborn child. Don't ask any of the actually hard questions.
I wouldn't even say the hard questions. They're the easy questions.
Yeah, they're the hard ones for that side because you know, they have uncomfortable answers. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. Like, we talk past each other in the pro-life and pro-choice movements.
Right.
And one of the reasons we talk past each other is because we're asking different questions. The pro-choice side is asking questions about women's bodily autonomy that presuppose that there's no child in the womb. They don't answer. They don't explain why there's not a child in the womb. They just assume that there isn't. Right.
Joe, can I ask you, is that really what they're supposing? I don't even think they're making a judgment about what an unborn baby is.
That's very fair. So
it's not a question of presupposing that there's no child in the womb. It's just, that part of this question, the central reality, we're not going to talk about. We're going to talk about everything other than that.
Right.
I mean, which, by the way, is
a house and someone said, hey, I think there are people living in that house you're demolishing. You said, hey, you know, I'm not an expert. I'm not an architect. I'm just here to knock the house down. We don't need to answer that question. Different people could reasonably disagree. And you just think that is an entirely unsatisfactory answer.
Well, it shows
the answer to the question makes a world of difference.
It shows that it's the central question. The fact that we're ignoring it is an admission on the part of the, whatever you want to call them, pro-death, pro-choice movement. The fact that they will not answer the question, they're admitting the reality.
I think so.
I think the number of so-called pro-choice people who really hold to the question or hold to the belief, excuse me, that's not a human person. That has to be a minority.
No, I think rather what they've done is this is not something that's physically recognizable to me at this moment as a human person. So I'm not. I'm just going to prescind from my moral responsibility. There's a certain way in which you can just blind yourself to it. Don't think about it. Don't look at it.
Although you have to have it removed, so it's there.
Well, it's like Dr. Phil the other day with who did he have on his show? Lila Rose, was it? He said, you know, biologically, doctors agree this is not. Well, he's probably
doesn't say they agree that it wasn't. They just said, we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very much Chris's point that he doesn't actually make an argument for when life begins. He just pleads agnosticism.
Yeah, but this is such a false agnosticism. Right. It's like the agnosticism of the person saying, we're going to knock down the building. We don't know if there's any people in there, but we got to get this building out of the way.
Nope. Yeah.
So I want to give you another one. And
Sorry, can I add one more?
Sure, please do, Joe. Yeah, please.
CNN, back in 2020, had a piece called Two Abortion Restriction Bills That Forced Tough Votes for Vulnerable Senators Fail in the Senate. And they're looking just at the political aspect of it. But in there, they're talking about the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act.
Yeah.
And it referred to a fetus that had been born. A fetus that was born, whether we should treat it the same as a baby. And it was like, guys, the child's out of the womb by that point, living, breathing. And the question is, if they're unwanted by the mother, should they still have human rights?
This is the governor of Virginia.
Right. But they deny that they ever said it. If you say you said this, they'll say, no, that's not what I said. That's not what. And it doesn't matter.
It's in print, but they go back and change it.
Right. Yes, I agree.
They did that with this. They edited it out after.
We have to take a break. There are coming up two of the most. I have three pieces of audio. Two of them are among the most astonishing things I have ever heard on American radio. And I've only ever listened to American radio and Mexican radio. So that's it. But these are
Stan Ridgway.
But I'm going to tease it with that because and I don't mean astonishing in a good way. What you're about to hear said as if it is normal to talk this way on National Public Radio, paid for in part by your tax dollars, right after this on Catholic Answers Live is going to astonish you.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
One time somebody said to me, "Why don't you air these people?" And I said, "No, because I don't think they're Catholic." He says, "By what right do you have to say that?" I said, "I own the network."
Mother Angelica Live Classics, every morning, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I always like to let you know what goes on here at Catholic Answers. And at the break, we were debating who's the greatest American general, I'm not gonna tell you who we said, but that's what we were debating. Okay, some more astonishing. Really, I am astonished by what you are about to hear. This comes from a story on National Public Radio. The story was about how to talk to your children about abortion. Two experts were brought in to answer parents' questions. What the parent says astonishes me. And then what the expert says astonishes me in the following clip. Clip 3, please, Darren.
She's a mom of 3 from Detroit, Michigan.
The 9-year-old is a little confused as to why people would want to get an abortion. And she doesn't understand what happens once they get it. Where does the baby go? Who takes it? It's a lot of questions that I didn't know how to answer.
So, Dr. Berlin, I want to turn to you because as a pediatrician, how might you explain an abortion procedure to a child?
Mm-hmm. When I think about kind of how to respond to this mom, I might think about talking about that some parents need to end a pregnancy and that it might be better and healthier and safer for the parent to end the pregnancy. So I tend to use kind of terminology about the pregnancy and not refer so much around the baby,
even though
that can be where children go.
Right.
Can you believe that was on radio?
Shocking.
That's a gem.
That's a pediatrician saying, "I don't talk about the baby."
Sign that woman up. That is extraordinary.
First of all, the child asked a brilliant question.
Where does the baby go?
A 9-year-old girl asked, "Where does the baby go?
Yeah.
What do they do with it?"
Yeah. Yeah.
And the mother says, "I don't know how to answer that." And
by the way, neither does the pediatrician.
Question. I don't want to answer that. What's that?
Right. She knows the answer.
She knows the answer, but she doesn't know how she's supposed to answer.
Like, it's such a bad thing to have to tell.
But I never want to answer that question for a 9-year-old. I mean, that's a heartbreaking question for a 9-year-old to ask. And the doctor says about the most propagandistic, horrifying thing that you can say.
Can I say how did this story make it past the editors at NPR? How did Elsa Chang's supervisor not say, you know what, Elsa, we're not going to run this?
Yeah. Because you just talked about how to kill a baby with a doctor who says, I won't say the word baby.
Yeah.
Like, that's not acceptable. You need to ask follow-up questions. You need to say something else about that. But no, there's nobody that – they didn't even see that this was wrong.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that's actually most disturbing in a way, is if there was, like, one pro-life person in NPR's office, they would be like, guys, this is a huge self-goal. Like, this is not the great victory for the pro-choice movement you think it is.
Right.
It's really horrifying what you're saying here. You know, as I mentioned George Orwell before, I want to give you just a couple lines from his essay on the way we misuse English language. Six sentences. He says, in our time, political speech and writing are largely the defense of the indefensible. Things like the continuance of British rule in India, the Russian purges and deportation, the dropping of the atomic bomb on Japan can indeed be defended, but only by arguments which are too brutal for most people to face, and thus do not square with the professed aims of political parties. Thus, political language has to consist largely of euphemism, question begging, and sheer cloudy vagueness. Defenseless villages are bombarded from the air, the inhabitants driven out into the countryside, the cattle machine gun, the hut set on fire with incendiary bullets. This is called pacification. Millions of peasants are robbed of their farms and sit trudging along the roads with no more than they can carry. This is called transfer of population or rectification of frontiers. In other words, like the game is always, if you can't defend the indefensible, just
say something else.
Cloudy vagueness. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Elizabeth Anscombe said it better than Orwell, but she said it better than everybody. So what's the essay? What's her famous essay?
Mr. Truman's Degree.
Mr. Truman's Degree.
Yes.
Yeah, you should read. Yeah, that's a great
Highly book. Recommend it.
But Orwell said it just fine. She's a better philosopher than he is. But
he's a better writer.
a philosopher is a different thing than a writer.
Yeah.
But I can't get over this bit of audio. I can't stop thinking about the 9-year-old child who asked a perfectly legitimate question, and the entire apparatus of media and medicine is arrayed here to quash the child's question.
Yeah, so two for two, the answer has been, don't answer the question, say this instead.
Yeah.
It's striking because this is the kind of Victorian attitude that Christians are accused of having about answering honestly about sexual questions. That, like, we just don't want to tell the truth about it, so we'll give some weird answer about, like, storks. Well, here it's something much worse that they just can't tell the truth about. It should be a huge red flag to anyone who's partial to this movement. Yeah. I mean, I think...
Why are you talking to children
should
like
be
this?
A red flag. Right. Like, one, why do you have to constantly lie or obfuscate or dodge the question? And two, why are you treating a wanted pregnancy this differently from an unwanted pregnancy? You know, like if a woman is happy about being pregnant, we don't say, oh, it's just a fetus, it's a clump of cells, it's not yet a person. No one plays those games if there's no reason to. You know, like when there's no stakes where you have to pretend the baby doesn't exist, everyone, regardless of political affiliation, regardless of views on abortion, treats the baby as existing.
Right. Yeah. Let's go to clip. What are we on, clip four now? Yeah, let's hear clip four. I don't even remember what it is, but we'll talk about it after we hear it.
I have a different opinion on it than most of the other people she's going to interact with. You know, we live in a very conservative area. All of my family that we live near is religious, and they definitely have an opposing view to mine on the abortion issue. And I want her to learn how to be sensitive talking about this stuff if it ever even does come up.
Any advice for James, either of you?
So it's a great life lesson to teach children that it's okay to have whatever opinion that you have. There's no right or wrong. And I think that's very, very important to encourage that, but really give them the appropriate facts for them to make great critical decisions, to create their own opinions, but be respectful for others.
That's it. What anything wow. wrong with that one? Or what do you think of that advice?
Let's get her on the show.
When people tell you what they're doing, then you should listen to them. If you're teaching children there's no right and wrong, those are her words, not my words. She said, you say there's no right and wrong, then that is evil. You don't teach children that there is no right and wrong. If you do that, you are abusing the innocence of the child.
Yeah, there's a line in Abolition of Man where C.S. Lewis points out that Aristotle taught that the aim of education is to make the pupil like and dislike what he ought. In other words, like Aristotle's whole vision of education was it was not about pumping facts and figures and helping your kids become better human calculators. It's about getting them to love things that are lovable and hate things that are loathable. And that's what true education looks like. So a person who says like, oh yeah, I'm really good at math, but I like to torture animals. That person has not been well formed. And you can't just say, well, you know, everybody, the basic rule is there's no right and wrong. Believe whatever you want. Do whatever you want. That is an insane way to try to run a society. And I challenge anyone to spend about 30 seconds thinking about whether they would really want to live in a society that lived by those principles.
This is why I'm such an admirer of Ailsa Chang, is her ability to just be completely open and casual while people are proposing absolute nihilism.
Wickedness.
You know? Wickedness, even worse than...
The ability of people to hold the conflicting thoughts in their head, like affirming what is sometimes called cancel culture, that people should be kind of run out of town for having discreditable views, and that there's no such thing as discreditable views, is really stunning to me as someone who doesn't agree with either of those kind of extremes. That how could we possibly say there's no right and wrong and still live the way we live in society? Because it isn't, you know, people say, oh, well, we believe in this nihilism in society, this relativism, and we don't. We have a very strange and often arbitrary moral code, but it's enforced as aggressively today as it ever has been. I mean, there's more things you would get in trouble for saying now publicly than there has been in my lifetime, for sure.
Let's do the other clip, Darren, because I realize we're about to run out of the hour. And I think I remember what this clip is now, but you go ahead and play it.
Well, Dr. Berlin, I'm wondering what you're thinking. Like, as a doctor, how should parents answer when their child asks, why do people choose to have an abortion? What's your advice there?
One of the thoughts I have is how much information is going to be helpful and how much might be scary. Because I think what we don't want young people to have is to think that women are doing harmful things to themselves and to pregnancy and doing scary things and that the abortion is a scary thing. So I think we want to really support moms and dads in assessing kind of how much information is going to be healthy and good for the young person. And then how can we explain that abortions are safe and they can really help families and women and pregnant people kind of move forward with their lives.
But if we say too much, then it's scary.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if we talk about a dismembered baby.
Yeah. Well, if we answer your question, what do they do to the baby or with the baby?
Yeah.
That's going to be scary.
It is scary.
That's going to be scary. And a child.
Berlin advocating the covering up of human rights abuses is almost too aptonym. You know, like.
Could you say that again, Joe? I missed the beginning of what you said.
Oh, I said someone named Berlin advocating the covering up of horrible human rights abuses.
Yeah.
The term aptonym comes to mind. Like if someone wrote this in like a Christian fiction book, you'd think that was a little on the nose.
Right. But that's exactly what this is. We don't want this this killing to be scary. But a child there is a certain way that abortion is traumatizing to a child because they know, well, I was just there. Like they how did I make it? How did I get out of this terrifying situation? Where it's good for a pregnant person to be able to, have this procedure.
I think this is a really good point, that the child is putting themselves in the position of the child, and the adult is putting themselves in the position of a person who might be tempted
said,
to have an abortion.
John. I mean, John, I don't know why I called you John right there.
Not brilliantly said, sorry.
That was like the Gospel of John. That's how brilliant that was.
I mean, I've got a 2-year-old, and so my uncle just died, and my daughter's been grappling with death with this. She asked in the car on the way to church on Sunday if he was going to get better, and we had to explain that he wasn't. And then she was quiet for a long time, and we said, are you thinking about Uncle Chuck? And she said, I'm thinking about Robin Hood. It was just like the inner workings of the child's brain. Like, she's constantly thinking about babies. And so to combine an idea like babies with an idea like death, those are really big things to put together in a little kid's world that you can see why it's traumatized, and rightly so.
Yeah. I want to thank you very much, both of you. We're going to continue in the next hour. We got more news stories to talk about. We'll talk a little bit about synods and synodality and a whole bunch more things. But I usually hang off on the NPR till the second hour, but I couldn't wait till the second hour for that. I told Darren, I'll just be jittery the whole first hour. I got to get this out of my system. It's horrible to hear it actually said, don't mention the baby. There's no such thing as right or wrong. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about American media, American medicine, unfortunately, and the entire abortion industry, the pro-choice movement. We'll be back to talk about other things right after this on the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.